From beautiful Mid-Coast Maine and community-supported radio, this is Terry Miller, and you are listening to WRFR LP 93.3 FM Rockland, or W257 BI 99.3 Camden. WRFR is local community radio for the Rockland-Camden area, licensed to Penobscot School and operated entirely by volunteers. Your financial support and the support of our local business sponsors is much appreciated. Our sponsors for this hour are
PDQ Photo Rockland. Reminds you that a hard drive full of memories can crash and take your photos with it. PDQ can safeguard your digital pictures by the simple act of printing them. Located on Main Street in Rockland since 1959, PDQ stands for Prints Done Quickly.
Peaceful Passages. Dr. Robin Elms offers personalized and dignified euthanasia service for all pets in the comfort of their homes and the arms of their beloved caregivers. Cremation is available. Her website is apeacefulpassage.net.
Penn Bay Medical Center, aiming for excellence always. Penn Bay Medical Center's goal is to be the preferred choice for health care in the Mid-Coast. You can find out what aiming for excellence means for your care online at pbmc.org.
Penny Royal Antiques, where everything is old, but there's always something new. At 23 Oak Street, downtown Rockland, Penny Royal Antiques is open Tuesday through Friday from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. or by chance.
And we thank you for listening. If you would like more information about volunteering at WRFR, you can call 594-0721 or visit our website at wrfr.org.
Hey there, all you beautiful people. This is the Rockland-Camden Area Community Calendar for Wednesday, February 27th. And a great big thanks to my friend Dan over there at the Free Press and all those cats over there at the Free Press for bringing us great news every week. Here's what's happening the 27th of February. There's an heirloom garden talk at 6:30 at the Friendship United Methodist Church. Diana George Chapin of Montville's The Heirloom Garden of Maine speaks on historic gardens, seaside gardening, and heirloom plants. Dessert will be served. And, the Strand Theater HD Dance Series begins at 7 p.m. at the Strand. Tonight is Don Quixote, performed by the Ballet Opera de Paris in December 2012 at the Paris Opera House. There's a Night of Inspiration and Transformation at 7 p.m. at the Rockport Opera House on Central Street in Rockport. Members of the Dirigo Toastmasters Club in Belfast share motivational stories in this hour-long program. Author Thomas Dowd will sign books after. This is to benefit the Special Olympics of Maine. And the Midcoast Community Children's Chorus registration is at 3:30 p.m. at St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Camden. This is for children 7 to 12. Registration will be followed by the chorus's first rehearsal. A parents' meeting will be held at 4 p.m. To find out more about this, 975-0582. And stress reduction sessions at the Knox County Health Clinic are Wednesdays at 4:15 at the Bach Medical Building behind the Rockland Library. Group ear acupuncture, chair massage, breathing, and visualization techniques that help reduce the effects of stress. Everyone is welcome and donations are accepted. To schedule or to find out more, 594-6993. And to find out more information about these things and other things happening right here where we live, visit wrfr.org.
And welcome to Joan Cheech's Radio Hour on WRFR. Tonight we're going to be airing part two of the Might Be Giants interview. This interview actually took place on February 15th, and former RFR DJ Kim Slauson conducted most of the interview. And the person we interviewed from the band was John Flansburgh. The other member of the band is also named John, but we just had one John for tonight. And it was a great interview, and actually it went over, so we've divided it into two parts so that we can also play some of their music for you. So I'll play the interview first, and then we'll finish up the night with some favorite tunes by They Might Be Giants.
An interesting space opening up, what with digital media and being able to, you know, in some ways interact with the audience directly in a way that you couldn't before with things like social media, podcasts, and that sort of thing.
The social media stuff definitely helps us in a lot of different ways. But yeah, it's it's how people find out about everything now. So there are a lot of different ways to approach it. You know, we do a lot of, we make a lot of videos, and we have a lot of kind of different kinds of projects happening. So it works for us.
I think some performers are even going to the extent of being funded directly by their fans, like the comedian Louis C.K.
There is this thing about that though that I wonder about, which is like it should have a name. I feel like you could call it like the Radiohead effect, which is like that kind of stuff tends to work really well the first time, but it doesn't always. It's not necessarily a repeatable result. Like,
because of the novelty.
I mean, Radiohead did, approach their fans and had them do a pay-what-you-want model for a project, and it worked fine. But I don't even know if they do that now. And it certainly didn't lead to other people, other people paying what they want. I mean, I guess from where I am, I spent a lot of time sort of thinking about the psychology of crowds, and I feel like the Louis C.K. thing or the Amanda Palmer thing or the Radiohead thing, you can talk about them as if they're models of the future, but they're really just examples of of one-time outside phenomena. You know, you can kind of, if you do something in a new way, it's really, really sparky. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's going to just behave in a different way from that point on.
I think people have a tendency to be pattern matchers, and so they see something that works, and they try to make a pattern out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, something like Kickstarter is an interesting, Kickstarter is real. You know, Kickstarter, in some ways, the real fuel of Kickstarter is the goodwill of tight subcultures. You know, the fact that you can raise money for something that's that essentially might seem extreme to the mainstream from the interest of your subculture is great. You know, it's like a lot of great stuff is going to get into the world because of Kickstarter. But it doesn't mean that, but that's more about extreme individuals functioning as benefactors more than it is about finding a new mass audience.
Right. It may not be a mass business model for most fans out there.
But the truth is, it's still really positive because the stuff gets made. And that is really, really great. I'm like, don't misunderstand. Like, I'm a complete fan of Kickstarter. I think it's actually a really sort of ingenious structure. So I'm glad it's working out.
Until all your friends
I'm not sure ultimately. It's interesting to see how people in the mainstream media try to describe what it is as a phenomenon, because I think in some ways it's sort of bewildering. I mean, the Amanda Palmer story seemed like kind of an easy, a lot of press stories are really about hypocrisy, and that, I guess, that was what they were trying to say, is like, look, she raised $1 million on Kickstarter, but she doesn't pay her musicians. Hypocrite, you know, and I don't think it's particularly fair. You know, what she was doing was pretty celebratory and pretty, I mean, I don't think there's anybody in the world who's as fan-friendly as Amanda Palmer. I mean, it's almost like that's the topic, is how accessible she is. But it's an interesting time. You know, we live in there's a lot of things going on at the same time. I think it's sort of sad in a way that the charts have been given up to this kind of miserable, mainstream, kind of almost provincial music. You know, I think the music generated by like television stars and you know, the mask. I feel like there's, I can't think of a time where, like, the mask culture was as, in music, was as unambitious as it is right now.
Well, it might be a reaction to the extreme amount of, I don't want to say nerdery and hipsterism, but, like, you know, there's also on the other end of the scale, there's the specialization, you know, there's all the different subgenres, and the way that the internet and the instant accessibility of pretty much any music you can imagine and YouTube videos wherever you want creates a culture where we can not only listen to whatever we want whenever we want it, but you can be into this entirely tiny specific genre of music that's, you know, just like that other genre over there, except different in this one way, and you can be such a nerd about it.
There's, you know, there's always been dreadful music and glorious music trends happening at the same time. It's not like, I mean, I was a teenager in the 70s, and I can tell you, like, it felt like the forces of evil were completely ruling the world. And, you know, but I look back nostalgically on half of the music that I thought was, you know, straight from the gates of hell, you know, whether it was, you know, the kids who beat me up in high school were wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt. Like, it was really hard for me to relate to Led Zeppelin as anything but just kind of a grotesque. But now I find Led Zeppelin to be fantastic. But they kind of had to lose their cultural signifiers for me to just really hear the music for what it was.
Yeah, I didn't listen to Pearl Jam till college.
I don't think anybody in the world ever says anything bad about Led Zeppelin, right?
How can you?
Everybody likes Led Zeppelin now.
we were talking about nanobots earlier, and you had talked about the drone. The drone song, which I had listened to and did find it to be kind of dark.
Mm-hmm.
I was still kind of curious about using the term nanobots, because that's kind of like a government conspiracy theory, isn't it?
No, I think nanobots is like an emerging technology.
Oh, okay.
I think in science fiction there might be apocalyptic kind of connotations with nanobots.
Yeah.
Which is this idea of, like, if self-replicating machines take over the world, there'd be this thing called gray goo, which is just basically the world of like the cyber world, kind of
plasma,
just overwhelming the Earth. But
yeah.
But more specifically, and kind of, you know, meanwhile, back on like planet now, nanobots are. Kind of, I think, on the fringes of medicine and robotics.
Mm.
There's an idea that you could actually create these tiny robots to repair your body on a cellular level.
Mm.
So they're like, you know, if you had cancer, you could create like a cellular robot that could go into your body and cure you of cancer.
In some ways, it seems like the album's a new direction, but in other ways, it seems like it kind of harkens back to your love of science-based topics and that sort of thing that you've always had a spot in your heart for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the title will be received by people. I mean, it does seem like an incredibly science fiction-y title in a way, which is strange. I think we've sort of shied away from, when people declare us, like the geek rock kings or like, you know, you're the nerd music guys. I think we always kind of shy away from it just because our background is really from new wave rock music, where that all that kind of geek stuff seemed a little bit unrocking and slightly toxic. But we're old, you know. I mean, we're really of a different generation, and it was that was a. That's kind of our cross to bear. I think the world has changed over the course of our career, where it's like we probably shouldn't be so self conscious about stuff like that.
So you said
I almost swore, guys. I almost said a word you can't say on the radio.
It's okay. We'll bleep it out.
Forgiven?
No, no, I know, but I was just like, just emblematic of how freewheeling I'm feeling now that we're deep into this conversation.
Well, it's good that, you know, you haven't been typecast as the Geek Rockers, and you've managed to maintain the bit of mystique, you know, that keeps people interested in your work.
Well, I think what's kept us interested in what we're doing is that, like, you know, I think, you know, we think of what we're doing as kind of an art rock project, I think, you know, that we're experimenting a lot with musical forms and kind of stretching out what, like, a popular song can be. And, you know, that, I mean, that sounds incredibly pretentious and probably is, but I think, you know, if you're a writer and you're doing stuff, I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world to be a little pretentious about what you're doing. You know, it's like, it's or maybe pretentious isn't the
well word. And when you do work, I mean, there's the goals behind your work, and then there's the public facing side of your work, and,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
maybe...
I think, you know, the truth is, like, we're ambitious about what we're doing, and we don't, you know, nobody wants to be, you know, pigeonholed. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like to be, or labeled, you know, if we were in a hair metal band. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were in the band Poison, right, it would be really accurate to say you were a hair metal band. But I don't think anybody in the band Poison wants to be told they're in a hair metal band. You know? I mean, they're just like, no, man, we're rocking. So, I mean, I understand. I understand the problems of hair metal bands.
One thing I wanted to ask about was, throughout the whole history of your work, it seemed like a lot of the lyrics of the songs are not down or dark, but some of the topics of the songs are kind of not happy, but the songs are sung in a happy sort of way. It's kind of a dichotomy.
Yeah, I mean, we tried it a lot of different ways, but I think that is sort of, there is kind of this, a lot of the successful songs that we've done have this this bittersweet push-pull between, I mean, you can't say adult themes because that makes it sound like porno, but, like, there's a lot of adult disappointment invested in our songs, and,
the mother girlfriend song,
We'll Call You Mom.
Yeah,
I mean, that's such a crazy song.
It has kind of an Oedipal.
Yeah, it's extremely Oedipal, and you know, I should say that I don't think it is autobiographical, but it is an interesting idea for a song. But, you know, we've had a lot of songs. We've written a lot of songs about, like, working and kind of. I guess the thing about rock music in general is, you know, just to make it like a sweeping generalization, is that so much of it is about, like, teenage rebellion and teenage, you know, this very, like, kind of everything kind of all caps kind of emotional crises. And, you know, when we started, we were already kind of adults when we started. We had jobs, you know, we just were like guys, like we didn't really start touring nationally until we were like 28 or 29 or something like that. And so I think we...
You make rock for grown-ups.
Well, yeah, and it's odd
You can run with that.
Well, we also make rock music for kids. So, like, I think from a distance it would be very easy to go, like, those are the guys who, you know, those are the guys who are always joking around. But I think in some ways we're trying to sort of take stuff to a different place, and it's hard to even describe or define what that is, because I feel like what we're doing is very post-adolescent, I guess, is the thing.
Well, I think the two sides complement each other well.
Oh, and good.
I used to have a kids show here on this radio station,
Really?
And
you spun discs for the Tots?
I did. I was a volunteer DJ here, and I read books, and I played kids' music on air, and I sourced a lot of my music from your playlist. So
I'm curious, what were the other kids' artists? Because I don't really know that world that well. Like, what did you play that you thought was of quality?
There's Adam and the Couch Potatoes. I like them. Willa Brigham did a couple of nice songs. I tried to stay away from the kind of poppy sort of, you know, you know, Disney songs and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an interesting time because there is this world of, like, kind of alt kid stuff. And I've been interviewed, I've done so many interviews where the peg of the interview is like that there's this community of alt rock people doing stuff for kids. I really don't know what they're talking about. I don't know the world that they're talking about. But we're clearly considered part of that world. Although I guess that's just what scenes are like. You know, when we started, we didn't really know what alternative rock was until we started playing in all these clubs that were alternative rock clubs.
Well, in a way, you were kind of inventing it as you went along. I mean,
it was just, you know, we were coming out of a New York scene that was very specific and seemed to have its own kind of cultural identity, which was much more of this kind of performance art, like theater, sort of half theater, half music scene. But when we actually started touring, we were playing in places where, you know, the Replacements had played the night before and Husker Du were coming the night after, and it was a very, it was actually very, very much a rock-oriented thing. I mean, as much as people say, like, oh, it's alternative rock, like, I think of those early club years as almost, those were the things that made us become more of a rock band, because there was a lot of rocking going on in those alternative rock spaces.
Well, in your early days, you also got a lot of play on, like you say, alternative rock, but also college stations.
I mean, the college stations were the original outlet for all that stuff. In fact, I think the previous title of the of that scene was really college. They would call it college rock,
as opposed to alternative.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, who came up with the idea for the approach all the college stations and local stations for interviews? Was that your manager, or did you guys come up with it?
I have to give credit to this woman in our publicity department. We were just sort of talking about how to find the people out there who would be interested. It seemed like, you know, there's a lot of goodwill around the band, and we just didn't know how to sort of find those people. So, and they just said, well, why just make a shout out?
Yeah,
they'll step up.
Cool.
And then the response was overwhelming. It was insane. I mean, I feel like half our audience seems like they have college radio shows. So,
yeah.
Well, you do a really good job of engaging with people on Facebook and Twitter and just talking to people.
Yeah, although I have to tell you, you know, it is kind of a one-way street. Like I do a lot of in the same way that you, you know, feed your pets or like take care of your plants. Like I make a point of always posting on Facebook, but I'm not part of Facebook beyond the They Might Be Giants site. Like I don't have a private Facebook life. And I have friends of mine who are obsessed with Facebook. They spend hours every day talking to people, and they actually have made friends through Facebook and gotten back in touch with old friends, but in a much more meaningful way on Facebook. You know, it's really its own culture. And the same is true of Twitter. I mean, Twitter is an interesting, I know people who are sort of in the comedy world who are really using Twitter as like a way to kind of get famous. You know, they're writing essentially jokes on Twitter all the time, and it's generating all this interest around them.
Well, you know, Twitter and to some extent Facebook, it's kind of like the online version of sampling. You know, the mashup culture of taking these little bits of wisdom or memes or images or whatever that other people have posted and you know, spreading them.
I mean, it is true. If I find a cat video that is extremely appealing, it will get the biggest response of anything I post. I mean, I could say, like, we've got a new album out, and, you know, 10,000 people will look at it. If I post, you know, here's, you know, cats, you know, kittens rolling around, and, you know, 80,000 people will check in with it.
Has anyone looked into the phenomenon of
the internet culture in cats, because it seems there seems to be some sort of
obsession. I'm sure there are multiple, like, postdoctorate thesis being written about the phenomenon, but it's, you know, I think the truth is cats are adorable, right? I mean, it's just that kind of comes down to that.
Yeah, I guess I beat the dogs.
I posted a video of goats screaming in human-like sounds today. And it was probably the most popular Facebook post of the week. And you know, a lot of people come to our Facebook page as much for that as anything else. You know, it's just like another, it's the way that, you know, you might look at a blog. They, you know, they're just kind of, they're letting us be their curator of their internet phenomenon search. And the Twitter thing is kind of like that too. I mean, it's very buzzy. You know, it's about what's happening right now in the culture. You know, everybody's just commenting on the right now.
Speaking of technology, you guys have a podcast.
We do. We haven't fed the podcast very much recently, although there are a couple of podcasts already that are kind of stuck in the that are circling the runway right now. I've been neglecting it because I've been just trying to get everything else done.
Well, it's not like you have anything else going on.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. No, you know, it's honestly, like, getting the iPhone app done took much more time than one would think an iPhone app would take.
Well, what do you usually do during your podcasts?
They're just the kind of wide open selections of rarities, and you know, one thing about, like, the They Might Be Giants, like the deep catalog, like I have a pretty big archive of recordings, and I guess that was really the impetus behind the audio podcast, was finding, it's a kind of stuff that would be a terrible thing to sell, but they're magnificent things to experience. You know, I wouldn't say that, like, the stuff that's on the audio podcast is, you know, important personal expression or artistic expression, but there's just a lot of crazy, misguided things from live shows and recording projects and just things that we've done that just, it's nice for them to find a place in the world.
Otherwise, you don't really have anywhere to put them, so it's nice to have an outlet.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, some things have kind of gotten famous from the podcast, but it's
a brilliant guerrilla marketing technique, kind of like Dial-A-Song was.
I guess so. You know, I mean, I
still have the Dial-A-Song number in my iPhone in hopes that someday it will work again.
Oh, we don't even control the number anymore.
It's probably somebody's home.
They're probably really upset.
Well, let's give them a call right now and apologize. it's an interesting project. I don't know if it's, you know, the thing about marketing projects, you know, if you're, you know, people are interested in stuff that seems big time, you know. I mean, they're interested in stuff that seems mysterious some of the time, but a lot of times they want to just know what's successful. And the thing about a lot of the projects that we've been involved in is that, like, they really burnish the idea that we're kind of lost and, you know, maybe a little bit hopeless. So I'm not sure that from a marketing standpoint, doing things like Dial-A-Song or the podcast necessarily impress people the way you want to impress them.
I think that there's a comedian that does dial a joke. And I wonder if maybe she had listened to your music or used to dial a song.
Well, I mean, when we were growing up, there was a thing called Dial a Prayer. That was, like, the most popular. That was the real dial, original dial a song, the original dial a thing. The Christian Scientists started a dial a prayer service in the 60s that was an outreach to people who were homebound.
Oh.
So it was a way that they could have, like, a spiritual experience, you know, even if they, you know, were bedridden.
Was that the inspiration for Dial-A-Song? Who came up with that? Whose idea was it?
I had the idea for Dial-A-Song. It was really at the very beginning of phone machines in New York City. We had moved to New York in 1981, and outside of New York City, nobody had phone machines. Phone machines were really a New York phenomenon, started in New York. And so it was just like a, you know, we're kind of shooting the breeze about, like, how weird these phone machines were and what they were good for. and it just seemed like, you know, you could make this thing, and where you just played a song on it and call it Dial Song, and we just started doing it. And what was nice about it is it kind of introduced us to a whole different kind of audience.
Well, you could tell that there were some people that were unfamiliar with it, like the people who called in, who saw the ad in the Village Voice, who were clearly confused by the concept.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we didn't do much to explain what our intentions were, and a lot of people didn't even really know that the Dial Song was the band They Might Be Giants. They just knew there was this thing called Dial Song, because we didn't say anything on it. We just played a song. So you just heard a song.
I'm talking specifically about that one recording that had the lady and the man with the very heavy Brooklyn accent, and the lady was wondering just what it was all about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we, I mean, we came home to endless crazy messages. It was a very misguided project, I have to say.
Well, that's an interesting point, is that people would leave messages and interact with you, so it was kind of an audience participation sort of effort.
A little bit, yeah. You know, some of the messages were kind of creepy. and at a certain point, we started getting so many calls that we couldn't take messages, because when the tape filled up, it would stop answering. So there was kind of like a flaw in the incoming, outgoing thing. If it couldn't record a message, it wouldn't play the message. So we ended up going to no message. I should jump. I gotta go.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for giving us an interview.
Thank you so much for your time. This was really fun.
Yeah.
And interesting.
All right.
Cheers.
All right. We'll have fun in your concert in Portland.
We will. We'll see you soon.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was our interview with John Flansburgh from They Might Be Giants. The interview happened the week before last, and we aired the first half last week, and we just heard the last half. The first half, I believe, is already available to listen to online. Kim Slauson, who you heard during the interview, he just posted it, I believe, to our wall on Facebook, which is Joe and Cheech on Facebook. And I'll be posting the second half, or if Kim beats me to it, I'll just put a link to his the two parts so you can listen to the full podcast. Anyways, if you're a fan of They Might Be Giants, or if you're becoming a fan, there is a concert tomorrow night, and it's at the State Theater in Portland, and doors open at 7. So you can get more information about tomorrow's concert at statetheaterportland.com. And so I was going to finish up the night with some music by They Might Be Giants. First, I'm going to play a song that is off of... I'm going to play two songs from their new album, Nanobots. We spoke about some of the music. And this song is called You're on Fire.
I forgot your name, whatever. My point is, hi, your head's on fire. Oh, damn, you must have got one of them combustible heads. I read an article all about them. You're on fire, you're on fire. Oh, damn, you're on fire. We'll be right back.
And that was You're on Fire by They Might Be Giants. And up next, I'm going to play another song from their new album, Nanobots. And this song is called I Lost My Mind.
Left somewhere behind. Must have put it in amongst the things we're throwing out. Nowhere to be found. Probably buried on the ground. I go try to dig it up, but I don't want to waste my time. To summarize, this whole planet is short, I am both the bag and the boxing glove. So all the blood is wet, transferred tattoo showing a finger pointing at the other one that says I lost my mind, left somewhere behind. Must have put it in amongst the things we're throwing out.
Take a quick moment to thank some of the sponsors of Joe and Cheech's Radio Hour. Those include T Printers and Publishers, Jesse's Seafood Market, and Filfberg and Associates. Tonight on Joe and Cheech, we're playing music by They Might Be Giants. Earlier, we heard an interview between Kim Slauson and John Flansburgh, and the interviews will be posted online shortly on Joe and Cheech's Facebook page. Also, we have a podcast page, which you can get to from wrfr.org. So the next song I'm playing, and I promise not to go on after every other song. I just had some information. So the rest of the show will be a bit more continuous. But this next song, I found out they actually have a song, They Might Be Giants. Now, it's probably not the first song they wrote, and I'm probably not on the first record. But this was kind of named, this record, Flood, was named as one of their best records. And it does have the song, They Might Be Giants. Also, as I mentioned earlier, if you're a fan or you're liking what you're hearing tonight, they will be playing in Portland on tomorrow night, so right away. And for more information about the Portland concert, go to the State Theater's website, statetheaterportland.com. All right, so up next, They Might Be Giants.
Hang on tight. Thank you. tighter just to keep from being thrown to the wolves.
Tabloid footprints in your hair. Tabloid footprints everywhere. We can't be silent because they might be giants. And what are we going to do unless they are? They might be giants.
Boy.
They might be giants.
They might be bald. They might be snow. They might be something else in the snow.
They might be giants.
Boy.
They might be giants.
They might be fake. They might be lies. They might be big, big, fake, fake lies.
nuclear submarine with a sticker that says STP. Windshield wiper washer fluid spraying in the air. Head lice under hats lie in the headlights everywhere. Subatomic waves to the underwater caves of the bee, of the bird, of the moth. Dr. Worm, I'm interested in things. I'm not a real doctor, but I am a real worm. I am an actual worm. I live like a worm, and I like to play the drums. I think I'm getting good, but I can handle criticism. I'm not a real doctor, but thank God.
physicists have found that the sun is a huge atom-crushing machine. The heat and light from the sun are caused by the nuclear reaction between hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, and helium.
The sun is a massive incandescent gas of an engine, nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
So there was a little science lesson there. Thank you for joining us on Joe and Cheech's Radio Hour. We have time for about one more song. Earlier this evening, we aired an interview with John Flansburg from They Might Be Giants. So we're finishing off the night with some music from the band. And we're going to post the interviews online. So we'll probably first post them to Facebook, facebook.com, Joe and Cheech. And also, you can check our podcast page by going to rfr.org and looking under archives or podcasts, and our past shows will be posted there as well as the interview. So, and I give it about a week for me to put it up because sometimes Cheech gets a little inundated. So stay tuned because after tonight's show, Kit Matthew will be on with Medium Rare. So last song of the night, 4 of 2.
Underneath a big clock at the corner of 5th Avenue and 22nd Street, I stood and waited for a girl I knew at the spot where we agreed to meet. It was 4 minutes of 2. At 4 of 2, I stood waiting for the girl. I was 4 minutes early for the date we had planned. I was planning to say I was in love with her just as soon as she showed for a 2 o'clock date. And the clock said 4 of 2. At 4 of 2, I was staring into space. She was not yet late, according to the clock. I was feeling nervous, so I kept looking up. I began to feel tired and I rubbed my eyes and again I checked the time. It seemed as if the sky was growing dark, but I felt reassured when I looked at the clock and it still said 4 of 2. I lay my head down on the sidewalk so in case she were coming I would have a better view. But no one was there, so I stretched out and closed my eyes for a second or two. It was 4 minutes of 2. At once I awoke to a futuristic world. There were flying cars and gigantic